Lucas. I'm here with Governor Raimondo and Dr. McDonald. We're ready to take your questions.
The conference is now in talk mode.
Hi, Dr. McDonald. I might have missed this in your remarks about the antibody test, but can you tell us what the name of the test is and where the state got the 20,000 antibody tests from? Was it purchased from a private company or from the federal government?
Yeah, so it is talking about, you did not miss me telling you the name of the company. I just didn't remember it, and I still don't remember it, so I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
That's why I didn't say it.
Who is that? It's Steph Machado.
Okay, Steph, we'll make sure we follow up with you.
Steph, I'll send a text right now to the guy who does our purchasing, and if you stay on the phone, I might have it by the time we're done.
Great, thank you.
Hey, Governor, this is Boston Globe. I'm curious, if you were to go back to those early cases, particularly the single-raise cases, I remember a lot of the response, particularly for the student, was that, she didn't show any, the student didn't show any symptoms, and so it was okay for them to be in school. I'm curious, now that we know more about the virus, do you guys almost regret kind of saying those things, and is there any fear that we've seen sort of a massive spread early on because we thought if you weren't showing symptoms, you were okay to be out in public?
Hi, it's Dr. McDonald. You know, it's a fair point you make, and I think it's one of those things where we worked with the best knowledge we had at the time, and that's what we knew. And as we learned more, then we got out the most accurate information we had. And I think you get to this issue where, and I guess I'll just make this point, it's a new disease, and it's possible that 6 months from now there's something that we're going to learn that's going to be revealing as well. And part of what I'm just going to throw out here is that I'm still a learner when this comes to this. You know, maybe a public health expert, but I'm still a learner. There's a lot for us to keep learning about this. So, you know, we're learning. And, back then we didn't know. And, it's funny, you get back to that thing I said earlier in the press conference. You know, when you don't know what you don't know, and that's where we have to work to questions. What do we know we don't know and go forward? You know, keep in mind, we were going with what the CDC was saying at the time, too. And so it wasn't just us. And just saying, this gets to the whole, there's a... We're learning as a planet on how to deal with this, so we're all learning together.
Can I just ask one quick follow-up? When you talk about what you're learning, I mean, that must be the most concerning thing, that we learn so much new all the time. Can I ask, where do you get your sort of new information from?
Yeah, so we get our new information from journal articles and from public health experts and from clinical experts who are working in the field. One of the fun things about this epidemic is I've gotten to know a lot more of the Rhode Island expert community. And part of why I give you a little context to that is, since I run the state medical board, I don't usually meet the elite of my state because they're not getting in trouble ever. And so this has been great for me to meet the intellectual elites of our state. And you know what's interesting too, I'll just throw this out here, is one of the things that's just heartwarming to me is whenever the director or I ask anyone to help us, the answer is always yes and whatever you need. I just think about Dr. Kellyenda, who was someone who's helping us with the testing, and it's like these are some of the most brilliant people on the planet. We're fortunate to have them here. And that's just part of where, so to answer your question, where I get information directly is the journal articles from around the world and from the local experts, and I just can't be thankful enough for them.
Can I just say something?
Thank you.
Dan, I just want to pipe in briefly, because I think you really put your finger on a pretty big deal. One of the things that makes this so hard for me, for any governor, for any leader making decisions, is that this isn't really an ideal environment in which to make decisions, insofar as information is imperfect, the situation is constantly changing, and also we don't have a lot of time. So especially in the early days, and even now, you know, one thing we've learned from other states and other countries is better to be safe than sorry, and don't wait, because if you wait, the consequences can be, you know, pretty bad, really bad. So it's a difficult thing, and we have no precedent for it, really. So that's why, for me, I haven't missed a single phone call that the White House has. I haven't missed a single NGA call. call Dr. Birx directly. We spend some time yesterday with Dr. Hahn, who runs the FDA directly. I'm constantly calling other governors. We tap Dr. Caliendo and Dr. Curtis, who are two local experts, to co-chair our testing advisory board. We're very lucky. These guys are like world experts, and they're in Providence. But just to get like reported the field for it, on our side of the bench, we are like in a constant search for information so we can make better decisions. But it's kind of what makes it difficult right now, because you don't have all the information you'd like to have before you have to make the decision.
Thank you.
For Dr. McDonald, this is Michael Billow from Motif. The WHO just put out a statement on Friday that said there's no evidence, that's their phrasing, there's no evidence that somebody who has COVID-19 antibodies in the blood is immune from reinfection or second infection. And they speculate that the levels of antibodies are significant and that they may even need to test things like T cells directly to determine whether there's cellular immunity. And in that vein, what do the tests that you've got, the serological tests that you've got, report? Do they report yes, no, or do they report levels and metrics, or can you tell, what can you tell from the test result? And then B, what do you think are the implications for future testing and ultimately even reopening the economy if serological testing does not guarantee immunity?
Yeah, so I love your question. You're right. And the World Health Organization, I think, made a very powerful statement, but it's the right statement to make. And think of it this way a little bit. Coronaviruses, which COVID-19 is a coronavirus, don't give us lifelong immunity. It's one of the common cold viruses. We get coronaviruses every year. You might have had one this year, too, just a common cold. So keep in mind, SARS, the original SARS, keep in mind, this is called SARS-CoV-2. But SARS, the original SARS, didn't give lifelong immunity. It still went away, though, and that's an important point. To your question, though, directly, you said, do the tests, there's qualitative tests and quantitative tests, and the qualitative tests will say, yes, you have it, and no, you don't. The quantitative tests will measure the reaction, like how much antibody do you have? It's in various solutions, 1 to 4, 1 to 8, 1 to 16, up to 1 or 2 up to 6. So the more dilute, the more likely your antibody response is potent. That still doesn't mean you have lifelong immunity. And part of why that's important is the only way you'll know if people have lifelong immunity is to longitudinally track the same people who've had the disease and see if they go on to get the disease again. And this is not all that different, though, from vaccine trials. Like when we do vaccine trials, what you're studying is did they get an immune response and then did they get the disease in question here. So the science exists for how to do this, but I think you're hitting on, to me, one of the most important points about the pandemic is we don't know that there's ever going to be herd immunity. And when I hear people talking about this, like, oh, just let the virus go. There was some lieutenant governor from Texas who said this about a month ago. And it was just like, oh my gosh, you don't know what you don't know, and you're frightening me. And it frightens me when leaders say things like this that are just irresponsible. And I don't mean to, I want to make sure you get that. That was irresponsible. We're talking about lives of our fellow citizens and residents here. I mean, you just have to be really cautious and careful about people because we don't know there's going to be long-lasting immunity. That's why it's very important for us to figure this question out. And that's why, as the governor said, I was really excited yesterday to be on this call with all these thought leaders. And that's one of the most fun things about my job is I want to underscore this. I am, at heart, a learner. Part of why medicine was so fun for me was I love learning. And one of the nice things about this profession is, although the profession of medicine is exquisitely humbling, it's intellectually exquisitely stimulating too. So I have a lot to learn. I enjoy learning every day. And to hear an expert say that he enjoys learning every day, I hope gives you comfort, because that's what experts need to do. We're learners, first and foremost.
Thank you, Doctor.
Governor, this is Alexandra from Channel 12 following up. Just wondering if you had any more specifics regarding compliance of businesses with the face coverings executive order.
Alexandra, this is Audrey. We're still tracking that down. I'll email you as soon as I get it.
Great, thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Alan over at 990 WBOB. I have a question regarding the veterans home. How many have been quarantined in regards to the resident, and how many, like, in regards to the staff? staff member?
Al, I think it's 16 are in quarantine. That's approximately right. 16 residents. And then, you know, like I said, everybody's being tested, all residents and all workers. And then the people in quarantine, the workers are going in and out a separate door. And Dr. McDonald just confirmed it is 16. So 16 in quarantine.
Thank you.
Governor,
to follow on that, do you know how many have been tested? I mean, how many staff have been tested? Or how many, what's the overall population?
I'm sorry, is that Klamkin?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I don't know, but I know they, by the end of the day today, they we'll all have them. So in other words, I don't know where they are right this second. It's like an all day, yesterday, all day, today thing, and we're hoping to have it all done by tomorrow morning.
You don't know the staff contingent or the population of the home?
No, but if you give me, like, you know, 3 minutes, we could call you back.
Yeah. No problem.
Governor, the program that starts tomorrow for the extra pay for home health care workers, so if I understand it correctly, the employer has to apply for the forgivable loan. So is it up to the employer whether or not healthcare workers are going to get this benefit? If someone's nursing home doesn't want to apply, can they not get this benefit?
Is that Steph?
Yeah.
Hi. Theoretically, yes. Although, I'd be pretty shocked if that happened because we've been in touch with every single one of them, the 96 nursing homes. We have it in great detail. And yes, I suppose that's true. And the reason that would be true is if they felt they were in good shape. In other words, they were able to fill all their shifts. There were no big staff shortages, not too many people out sick. And I suppose in that instance, if they thought they were okay, then you know, like you said, they wouldn't apply for the money. And if they don't apply for the money, then that's right. So we'll have to see. I suppose it's possible a lot of people wouldn't apply, but I just cannot imagine that happening in light of how desperate they have been, you know, recently. It's a forgivable loan, so the only way that the loan is forgivable is if all of it goes into wages. So if, for example, they apply and don't use it for their frontline workers, then they have to pay the loan back. Also, I have an answer for you. We bought the kit, the serology test, from a company called SD Biosensor. SD Biosensor.
Gotcha. Thank you. And is the cost of that going to be covered from the Coronavirus Relief Fund?
Yes. Well. My initial gut instant reaction was yes. However, on Friday, the president signed a new piece of legislation which allocated additional billions of dollars to states just for testing. So when we figure out if Rhode Island gets any of that, I might decide to use that for the testing instead of the Coronavirus Relief Fund. One more question.
Okay.
It's also in flux right now with the federal money, but assuming Rhode Island doesn't get that money or I can't use it for that, then yes, we'll use the Coronavirus Relief Fund.
Governor, you had mentioned that Rhode Island was in need of gowns, and there's a story that in Massachusetts, there's a company in Massachusetts that's making gowns. Do we have a private company in Rhode Island that's making gowns? This is John DePietro.
Yeah, so I'm trying to go through my email quickly enough to answer you, John. The short answer is yes, and late last night I got an email that we do have a local supplier that has just sent us 3,000 gowns that's been made locally, which was a gigantic relief. Here we go.
Fantastic.
The guy's name is called Mero Sewing, Merrow Sewing. This might be a Massachusetts company, actually.
and they just delivered us late last night 3,000 gallons, many more to follow. It's really great. I should say, the night before, I spent all night trying to get Director Gaynor to send us gowns from FEMA, and was told that it's a national shortage and we should try to figure out our own plan. So that's still where we are.
They're in Fall River.